This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
And this is David Swanson at a People Speak Radio, and it's my honor to have as guest on the program today Congressman Robert Wexler, a Democrat from Florida. Congressman, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hello.
Congressman.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Terrific. Thanks for being on the People Speak Radio. Your website, WexlerWantsHearings.com, continues to be quite a popular destination. 213,000 people have signed a petition there urging Congress to begin Cheney impeachment hearings.
Yes.
What's been your experience with that website, and do you have a particular numerical goal for it?
I don't have any particular numerical goal. Actually, our original goal was 50,000 people, and I am just astonished in the most positive of ways as to the level of interest and commitment that people have in terms of speaking out and lending their name and their signature to support a effort to begin impeachment hearings with respect to the vice president. We started this website, WexlerWantsHearings.com, and the response has been extraordinary. What I think it proves is that there is a groundswell of interest, a groundswell of commitment, and a groundswell of disappointment amongst the American people from all walks of life, from all 50 states, from all kinds of backgrounds, to hold this administration accountable. There are legitimate, serious, substantive allegations that have been raised with respect to Dick Cheney that relate to the precise powers of the vice presidency and the executive branch, and people want the Congress to engage in their constitutional responsibility, which is to check the balance of power with respect to the president. There are certain
I know there have been books written, including by the chairman of the committee, but what would you say are the top two or three areas to hold hearings on?
With respect to the vice president, I believe we ought to inquire whether or not he exposed covert CIA agents for political purposes, whether or not he knowingly ordered the illegal use of torture, whether or not the vice president manipulated intelligence, which resulted in a false pretense to the Iraq war, and then the broader questions of whether or not this vice president has obstructed federal investigations by ordering people in the administration to ignore subpoenas, and whether or not the vice president has participated in an abuse of the executive privilege. These are all questions, I think, that merit inquiry. And when I say inquiry, I believe that we ought to conduct a sober, fair hearing, give all sides a equal opportunity to present their case, and let the evidence lead where it dictates. I have no political outcome in mind. I just want there to be an airing of issues, and we are in the midst, in the eighth year now, of an administration that has largely operated in the most secretive fashion, and they have, in my mind, used and in times abused the executive privilege to the point where the American people are, in effect, in the dark. And it is through impeachment hearings that the Congress would have the ability to, in essence, undo the abuse of executive privilege by the vice president and other members of the administration.
It does seem clearly that, and people like John Dean, who should know, have said that this is the most secretive administration on record. And even over 2 years ago in Congressman Conyers' book. He lays out a list of refusals to comply with FOIA requests, keeping records secret that were never secret before. We now have a list of subpoenas that have been simply refused, of witnesses who have refused to come in when requested but not subpoenaed, of witnesses who've shown up but miraculously lost their entire memory of what they've done for the past year. What's different about an impeachment hearing as compared to all of these non-impeachment hearings that we've been through for the past year?
Well, I think you raise some of the most valid points, and let's be specific. With respect to Harriet Myers and with respect to Josh Bolton, I believe these are the first two instances in American history where, in effect, cabinet-level officials, people very high up in an administration, have not only refused to comply with a subpoena from Congress, but they have refused in its entirety even to show up. I mean, it would be one thing, and I would find this difficult for other reasons, but it would be one thing if Harriet Myers showed up and said, listen, I'm here, but I'm not going to answer your questions, and here are the reasons why. She doesn't even show up. And what's even more exasperating, I believe, for all Americans, is that the president and the vice president have taken the position that if and when Congress holds people such as Harriet Myers and Josh Bolton in contempt of Congress, which I believe we should do immediately, that the administration will order the Justice Department, in effect, not to enforce those subpoenas. So this is, I believe, what may be the most clear example of a administration, the vice president and the president, but the vice president is directly involved in several of these matters, an administration that is pushing the power of the executive well beyond that which the framers of the Constitution had envisioned. And what I believe we're talking about, what is at stake in the context of holding this administration accountable, is the very checks and balance system that was so artfully developed more than two centuries ago. The Congress has, in essence, belittled itself to the point where I think we need an effort to rebuild the Congress and our powers before the next administration takes office, because I would not want where we are now to serve as a precedent for Congress's ability to hold an administration accountable.
The stories in the news today are that the leadership has determined not, at least not anytime soon, which is, of course, what would be needed, to go ahead with contempt. And so assuming that contempt is now off the table, what options are left other than impeachment? And as you've already noted, were they to move on contempt, the Justice Department is going to refuse to deliver the citations. The Constitution doesn't seem to give us many options other than impeachment.
First of all, let me just say that I and others on the House Judiciary Committee are going to push very hard that we pursue the contempt citations. I believe it would be in the interests of the institution of Congress and in the interests of the American people in attempting to hold this administration accountable to make certain that government officials must respond to congressional subpoenas. And simply disavowing any congressional attempt at holding this administration accountable through the subpoena power, I think, is a very poor practice. And so we're going to continue to push. I don't think it's fait accompli that that's where we're going to end.
Have you spoken with Chairman Conyers about either contempt or impeachment hearing?
Yes, at length today, as a matter of fact, Chairman Conyers called a meeting of which I was a part of, as were several others. And this was the subject matter of very strong and intelligent debate. And I think there is a consensus of opinion amongst many at this meeting that we need to pursue the power of congressional contempt. Now, I don't speak for anyone, of course, other than myself. I don't want to violate any confidences, but I do believe there is a significant number of members of Congress, members of the House, that believe Congress's reputation is at stake. And if we simply allow this administration to continue to ignore congressional inquiries, that we are establishing a very dangerous precedent, and that the fear is, in effect, we become complicit with what the administration is doing. We become an enabler. There historically is actually another avenue. I was just meeting with some congressional experts with respect to congressional contempt power, and there is something called the inherent power of contempt, which is separate and apart from, in theory, the executive branch, where if it wished, the House could pursue a inherent contempt of Congress claim, where the sergeant of arms, if the House voted, could in theory become the enforcer of the subpoena. Now, that has never been done in the context of a high administration official, but on the other hand, to my knowledge, never has a high administration official simply refused to come to Congress.
Well, needless to say, both of those approaches, as well as impeachment, appeal to a wide portion of the population that's looking for accountability and Congress to show some strength as against the executive branch. And yet the clock is ticking. And if contempt is to be pursued prior to impeachment, and contempt isn't going to start until a nice bipartisan economic stimulus plan is negotiated, then the clock would appear to be ticking down on the impeachment movement. And, you know, the stories today, the leadership wants to negotiate with the president on an economic stimulus plan, which to my mind is going to lead either to, you know, a good bill that gets vetoed or a bad bill. And I'm inclined to quote Ronald Reagan, you know, we don't negotiate with terrorists. I mean, do you get the impression that the public is seeking bipartisanship and cooperation with Bush and Cheney? Is that what you're hearing when you go outside of Capitol Hill?
I hear two things. I hear more than two, but I think two general principles. And to a degree, this is the dilemma that Democrats face. On the one hand, people want results. They want their government to take action on the Iraq war. They want the government to take action on what is now a very frightening economic situation for many, many people. They want the government to take action on global climate change. They want us to enact a children's health care bill, which seems so obviously positive to people. And we just again voted to override the president's veto today on that act. They want us to move forward on stem cell research and are upset that the president continues to be strident in his opposition. There are a whole host of issues, education, also in my state of Florida, property taxes and property insurance as it relates to hurricanes is an enormously important issue. But at the same time, people have become frustrated. I think a majority of people with the president in his failure to meet the Congress halfway. And what they see is a president that is getting away with, in effect, his stridency and his stubbornness, and a Congress that does not stand up to the president. So ideally, what I'm hearing is most Americans want results. They don't want to hear about Republican or Democrat or you know, liberal or conservative. They want results. But they're also, most Americans, practical people, and they understand there's a political process. And they make a judgment as to who within that political process is engaging in good faith. And I think it appears to most Americans that on too many of these issues, the president is not engaging in good faith. It's his way or the highway. So what then are we supposed to do other than hold him accountable and at times where it's appropriate, call his bluff? Now, with respect to the economic stimulus, let me just say this. In my view, there is no reason in the world why Congress cannot pass a very important economic stimulus package that benefits people that need it most and helps us work our way out of this economic hole. And at the same time, simultaneous to that effort, even if we are working with the president on that package, aggressively hold this administration accountable in a way so that the American people understand what has happened with respect to federal investigations, with respect to the exposure of covert CIA agents, with respect to the illegal use of torture, with respect to abuses of intelligence on the issue of the Iraq War and other important issues. We can do that. With respect to Harriet Myers and Josh Bolten, the case could not be clearer that they are, in fact, in contempt of Congress. There is a Supreme Court case or two which is clear on the point. The congressional position, I believe, is one that all reasonable people could support. So I don't know why it has to be one or the other.
Yeah, it seems like when Congress moved toward impeachment with Richard Nixon, at the same time, it was able to pass the Endangered Species Act, raise the minimum wage, cut off the funding for a war, and if anything, the president was more cooperative because of the threat of impeachment than he might have been otherwise. Certainly that's how Daniel Ellsberg and others interpret it.
Yes.
From the tapes of Nixon worrying about impeachment.
You raise what I think is an extremely important point. And I agree with that. That's not a reason why you do impeachment, but that, in fact, may very well be a byproduct of impeachment. And also understand what I'm calling for on WexlerWantsHearings.com is not even impeachment hearings regarding President Bush, but impeachment hearings regarding Vice President Cheney. And clearly we can engage, in my view, in hearings regarding the Vice President without stopping, in effect, the very valid objectives of the Democratic Congress. We can do these things all at once, but back to your original point, certainly we can do contempt of Congress of Harriet Myers for not showing up at all, and Josh Bolten not showing up at all. We can do that while also doing an economic stimulus plan.
Well, I got to say, I love the approach you're taking at WexlerWantsHearings.com, going for hearings on Cheney. But it's worth asking the question, you know, there was a report today that came up with 935 lies or false statements by administration officials in the lead up to the attack on Iraq, 260 by Bush, 48 by Cheney. Now, of course, some of Cheney's were among the worst and most blatant and perhaps most had the worst consequences, but you know, next Monday, State of the Union Day, Congressman Kucinich is planning to introduce lengthy articles of impeachment on Bush. What is your current position with regard to Bush as opposed to Cheney?
Well, you know, I think Congressman Kucinich deserves a lot of credit. He has been out on this issue out front, you know, as an individual for many, many months, actually even longer than that. And my hat is off to him, because he's had the courage of his convictions. And it was, in fact, Congressman Kucinich's motion on the floor of the House that first, a couple of months ago, focused the House of Representatives on this issue. And it was Dennis who had to force that vote, and his resolution with respect to the Vice President was then referred to the Judiciary Committee. And that is, in effect, what I have been working off of, that resolution of reference. So that's what I'm focused on. And I applaud the incredible conviction that Congressman Kucinich has, and that's where I think we ought to focus.
I understand that you've drafted a letter to Chairman Conyers, and you had been seeking signatures of your colleagues on the Judiciary Committee.
Yes.
And now I understand you're also accepting signatures of any Congress member on or off the committee, so,
yes,
so that anyone can ask their Congress member to contact your office and sign on. How's that going, and what's the timing for delivering that?
It's going well. At the same time, it's going slowly. This is an uphill battle. I don't want to in any way sound naive. It is a big decision for a member of Congress to put his or her name on a letter asking that we begin impeachment hearings with the Vice President of the United States. So I think there are a number of people who are considering the pros and cons, and shortly will make a decision one way or another. And when we're done, we'll announce all the names. I think we're up to 13 names so far, of members of Congress who have signed. I'm very pleased with that. My hope is that we will get several more, and by doing so, we will show a level of support for hearings.
And do you have a date when you plan to deliver the letter, or wait and see?
We haven't picked a precise date. Obviously, we're not going to wait that long. I will probably, in an informal way, determine if members of Congress are genuinely still thinking about it and what the situation is. Congress is first really getting started these weeks, obviously. And as you said, the State of the Union address is next week. So I want to let members have these first couple of weeks where they're getting back into their issues and considering their priorities for this year, give them the opportunity, and also give them an opportunity to go back home a couple of times and hear from their constituents. Because that's the way I became convinced, quite candidly. When I was back home in Florida, I think it was in December, or maybe it was in November, when I had gone, I think, to two town hall meetings, and numbers of people, not in an organized fashion, and very mainstream people, just kept asking me, why not have impeachment hearings? Why not have impeachment hearings? And it got to the point, after discussing it with my constituents, that I became convinced, after looking into the allegations, that this is something I wanted to do. So I know every district is different, but I think there is, throughout the country, in most districts throughout the nation, a very significant number of people who want this administration to be held accountable. And I think the more members of Congress hear from their constituents on this issue, the more support there will be. And that's the way this process should rightfully work.
Well, what a lot of districts seem to be lacking thus far is a Congress member who listens to the constituents the way you have. But we have some questions coming in at the People Speak Radio by email.
Sure.
And I want to see if I can get to one or two of them before we close out here. Jeremiah in Arkansas asks, Congressman Wexler, do you believe you are being stonewalled by the Democratic leadership? And if I could add to that, I don't know if Congressman Conyers conveyed anything to you about his reasons for now opposing impeachment, and you don't have to reveal anything, but next week on this same show on Tuesday evening, I'm going to be interviewing John Nichols, who has a book called The Genius of Impeachment.
Yeah, it's right on my
desk, as a matter
of fact.
I mean, he makes a strong case that politically, not that this is the moral argument, but politically, the party that pursues impeachment wins in the next election. So that you went after Nixon and you won, you let Reagan go and you lost. Is that sort of argument useful? Is that what we're up against? Is a political calculation, or what is the thinking behind the leadership's removal of impeachment from the table?
Listen, John Nichols is a brilliant man. He's a terrific writer, and the arguments he advances are very worthy. I'm going to let him make that argument on the political side. I'm not going to do that. I simply want to make the argument at this point for impeachment hearings and let the evidence dictate where we go. And with respect to the Democratic leadership, I respect them. They are my friends. We share many, many objectives and goals together. On this issue, I disagree. I believe that it is in the best interest of the nation to have impeachment hearings. I believe it is only through impeachment hearings that we will hold this administration accountable, or at least that will be the best way to hold this administration accountable. And I think we can have these hearings with respect to Dick Cheney and also accomplish the very important results that the American people want with respect to the economy, with respect to healthcare, with respect to schools, with respect to insurance issues. I don't believe it's one or the other. And that's where I would respectfully differ.
Well said. If I could try to squeeze in one or two more questions from listeners. Steve in Arizona is asking, how does the congressman feel about Bush and company giving themselves a retroactive pardon, and how did Congress let that slip by? My guess would be he's referring to the Military Commissions Act that was passed a year or more ago. Do you have any thoughts on that topic?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would agree. I would agree with, I think, the sentiment of the questioner. It seems, again, to be a bit of an abuse of power. The questioner may not have been asking about Scooter Libby, and that, of course, was a commutation of sentence of one of their own, which, when it occurred, I filed a motion of censure, a resolution of censure, with respect to the president. Because I believe while the president certainly has the power to commute a sentence, that in this instance, the president was not being truthful with the American people in the case of Scooter Libby, because what he said was, is he thought the sentence that Scooter Libby received was excessive. Well, if the president was being forthright and honest, he would have reduced the sentence from 24 months to 14 months or 9 months or 6 months. The president has the power to do that. But what the president did was he completely eliminated the sentence, which suggests that the president had far different motives. And for me, I think that is an abuse of the commutation power and should have been condemned by this Congress. So unfortunately, I think it fits a pattern.
In fact, both James Madison and George Mason wanted impeachment in the Constitution in case a president ever pardoned someone for a crime he himself might be involved in.
Well, there
Doesn't
you
it
go.
Seem about like that sort of case finally having come up?
certainly seems familiar.
We've got one more question and a couple of minutes. John in the Canadian Rockies asks, I was involved in a petition to impeach Nixon and Agnew shortly after the illegal bombing in Cambodia. Would a proper petition, not online, help at this time, Congressman Wexler?
There, in fact, have been several petitions. I don't know if they were online or as the questioner suggests, of the ordinary sense, before we had online petitions. I think more than 1 million signatures have been delivered to the Congress. So I certainly don't want to in any way quash anyone's enthusiasm, but I would highly recommend that people sign my WexlerWantsHearings.com petition and encourage people's involvement in the political process. But, I would not necessarily recommend yet another petition unless it was something different. But that's certainly not what I think we need at this point. What I think we need is to convince members of Congress that holding hearings is in the best interest of the nation.
Well said. Congressman, thank you very much for your time today and for everything
that you're
doing. Our pleasure. I would encourage everyone to go to WexlerWantsHearings.com and sign the petition. And this is David Swanson at the People Speak Radio. And again, Tuesday evening, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, I will be interviewing John Nichols, who is the author of The Genius of Impeachment.
Thank you, Congressman. That's going to be a great interview because he's a very smart man.
I think so.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Congressman. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the city wall, by the relief fast, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land was made for you and me.